Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. From the Gospel of Mark, from the first chapter, verses 29 all the way to 39. As soon as they left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. And now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once. He came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or possessed with demons, and the whole city was gathered around the door. And he cured many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons, and he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. In the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." He answered, "Let's go on to the neighboring towns so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came out to do." And he went through Galilee proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons.
Jikalele, Jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele.
A note to listeners, while the address you're about to hear was delivered live in worship, the recording did not survive. We've been having lots of trouble with the podcast, but we're working on it. And I'm here this morning to share this one more time, alone this time in this space, thankful for your listening ear. It seems like just a few days ago, Simon and his brother Andrew were casting nets into the sea. James and John, they were doing the same, though they had a boat. That was their life, going out, casting nets, coming home, sharing a meal. Surely some days were more exciting than others, but really that's all it was, going out, casting nets, going home, sharing a meal. And then there was that day that Jesus walked by and called them to follow him, said he'll make them fish for people. I wonder what they had in mind when they left everything behind to follow him. What did they expect? What did they want? As Linda reminded us last week in worship, the details in Mark are always sparse. We just don't know. This gospel leaves us wondering. See, it was just yesterday, those first followers were with Jesus in the synagogue. They'd been to the synagogue plenty of times, but something about this time was different. Jesus taught with authority, authority like they'd never experienced before. And then there was that moment in the middle of his teaching when a man walked in, possessed by unclean spirits. Maybe you've seen that person. I used to see folks like this when I lived in downtown Sacramento a lot more often than I do now. We've moved out in this neighborhood, and our society, our culture, we as people have a way of sectioning ourselves off from having to see the rawness of life that so many experience. And this person who came in, it was like one minute he was yelling, and then in the next minute he was on the ground. His words did not string together into sentences. He just did not make sense. Shouting, yelling. And then at once Jesus spoke, and everything that had been tying this man up crashed to the floor. And in the silence, those first followers could see through to the person who was there all along. Some people call it an exorcism of a demon. Some say it's miraculous. To be honest, I don't know what to call it. But by the next day, it must have still been fresh in the minds and the memories of those first followers, because at least one of them had the courage to go up to Jesus and to let him know that Simon's mother-in-law was not well. She was sick, not sick like the man in the synagogue, just down and out in the bed sick. Jesus touched her and lifted her up. The fever went away, and we're told immediately she went back to work, serving her family. Maybe she was back to herself, preparing meals, making life work again for everyone in the home. And if any of you have had the caretaker of your family fall sick, you know that it's a miracle when that person is well again, because life just doesn't keep on keeping on when that person isn't there to take care of all the details, all the ins and outs that so many of us just let go. I think that's what happened that day as Jesus healed Simon's mother-in-law. He brought her back into service in her community and in her family, lifted her up. And then I suspect a few of those first followers told a few of their neighbors, their friends, and a few of those folks told a few more. And then within a few moments, we have a biblical version of a viral video, 1 million hits in just a few hours. By sunset, the whole city has gathered around the door. We're told that Jesus cured many and cast out demons from others. And it leaves me wondering, what were those first followers doing? I'm guessing that Simon's mother-in-law was cursing the fact that all of this was happening. She had not been well. Finally, she is back on 2 feet, and all of a sudden, the entire town is at her doorstep. And this isn't a doorstep like we have today. See, our doorstep has this nice thing that's called a door, and we can close it and keep our neighbors out, away from us when we need to. But back in the day, by doorway, what they meant was more like just the whole neighborhood was in your kitchen. And I did say the whole neighborhood, like not just the neighbors down the street that you really like to have over every once in a while, but all the neighbors that live next door, the neighbors that you want to try to avoid at times, they're all there in the house, in the kitchen. We have a 2-year-old, and I'm reminded constantly that she's hungry or that she needs something. And I'm guessing some of them brought 2-year-olds as well. And so it meant that everybody was going to need to eat, and everybody was going to need to find a place to use a restroom. This was a mess in their kitchen. It leaves me wondering if some of those fishermen actually went back to the skills that they had just left not long ago, and they brought together some of those fish and maybe prepared a meal for all those folks that had found their way to their home. The story is sparse on details, but it leaves me wondering as well, like, were all of the people gathered in that little room, the room that they kept for the guests? Did they all gather there? Maybe some stayed overnight. It's that room like the room Jesus was born into in Luke's gospel. And then it leaves me wondering as well, see, in our family, bedtime is around 7:30 with our daughter, but I know from our musicians that other folks don't have 7:30 bedtimes, that they stay up quite a bit later, and I think this was one of those nights. One of those nights when Jesus was healing and folks were staying up late into the night, early into the morning. And I wonder if they had blurry eyes when they woke up the next day. I wonder if people from the next town over had heard about what was happening and if they made their way there as well. What we do know is this, that while it was still dark, Jesus snuck away to a deserted place to pray. I'm sorry, the house is still a mess from last night. He didn't even mention where he was heading or how long he'd be away. I imagine the questions for those folks that were gathering outside of that front door were growing enormous. Where is this Jesus? I've come a long ways. How long am I going to need to wait? He's the one that's been healing folks, right? Well, where the heck did he go? It happens to first followers. We don't always have all the information we need or desire. I'm thinking Simon in particular was sending his friends out because this was his mother-in-law's home. We need to find this Jesus. He didn't leave us a note. He didn't tell us how we should carry on with the business. He didn't tell us how we should find him. Nothing. He just took off. And so I imagine these first four followers were searching pretty frantically to try to figure out where he'd gone. I'm guessing they were feeling a little embarrassed, a little anxious because they didn't have the answers, maybe even a little angry because they weren't ready to take the lead. When they found Jesus alone and praying while it was still dark, I think they lost some of their chutzpah because instead of lashing out at him, instead of letting him know how frustrated they were, instead of letting him know that he'd left them with all these folks to care for and no guidance on how to do it, instead of that, they simply said, "Everyone is searching for you." Meaning, we've been looking everywhere for you. Why could you not have let us know where you'd be? Are you kidding? His reply is astonishing. "Let's go on to the neighboring towns so that I can proclaim good news there as well, for that is what I came out to do." See, those first followers, they wanted to do their best. I really believe they did, but this wasn't going to be easy. Following is really hard work, especially when we don't have a checklist. Really, they didn't have much training at all. They were fishing one day and then following Jesus the next. It was this, "See me do it, now you go do it and I'll observe, and then teach others to do it" form of training. It moves really, really quickly, and there's not much detail there. Just see it, now do it, now teach others. You could say that the first five chapters of Mark's gospel are all about the followers watching Jesus, learning to follow by following. And then in chapter 6, everything shifts. By this time, Jesus has gathered his first 12 followers. He's told parables. He's healed people. He's restored people to community. But then in chapter 6, he sends those first followers out in twos to do what he's been doing. He orders them not to take anything. Well, they can have a walking stick. No bread, no bag, no money. Just go house to house, and where you're welcomed, stay. Heal. Share good news. Leave when you're not welcomed any longer. Share the good news and heal. When you're not welcomed, carry on. Now follow me. Did you notice that Jesus doesn't send them away to school? He doesn't send them away to become experts in the law. He doesn't send them away to learn all the ins and outs of the laws so that they can argue more effectively about their points. He doesn't say, "Believe in me and then go on doing what you're doing." He doesn't even seem in Mark's gospel to tell folks, to want folks to know that he's a Messiah. It's almost like a secret for him in Mark's gospel. The mission for the first followers of Jesus is as simple as it can be: follow Jesus. And in Mark's gospel, to follow Jesus is to orient our lives entirely with and around the way of Jesus. This isn't for the faint of heart. See, Jesus sends them out in twos right after he's been rejected in his own hometown. He knows that following is going to be messy. He tells them, "When you go out, there will be places that you will not be welcomed. Dust off your feet and move on. People are going to shut the door in your face. They'll say you're crazy. They'll wonder what's happened because you didn't used to go around this way. He doesn't send them out to follow with the comforts that we might long for, desire, expect, just a walking stick. But you know what? Before following Jesus, the disciples, they weren't going about feeding 5,000. That's right, life has taken on new meaning for these first followers. It's not Jesus who feeds those first 5,000. The disciples look to him, kind of like they looked to him back in the beginning of this story. They look to him saying, all these folks have gathered at our house. Everybody's been searching for you. Where have you been? They look to him out there after they've been commissioned. And in that moment, Jesus says, feed them. And those first followers respond. And you know, that must have felt pretty significant. You know, this kind of being able to feed 5,000 people, this is way bigger than when we were just fishing. The valleys can be really low for first followers, but those peaks can be high. They can go to our heads. They definitely went to the heads of James and John. Because soon after this happens, they're talking with Jesus, kind of taking him off to the side, saying, hey, you know, in the glory, it seems like it might be in your best interest for the two of us to sit next to you. You've noticed how good we are at this, right? We've been following you. You've seen of all your followers, we kind of are following better than they are. It just happens to us. It goes to our head. Maybe it's gone to your head. Maybe it goes to my head at moments. But the trouble is, that isn't followership. That's celebrity leadership. Look at us. We're VIPs. Following is upside down from celebrity leadership. And that's mostly all our culture knows, is celebrity leadership. We wait for the next person to see go by like a shiny object, to point and think that we're following, but really we're just waiting for the next shiny object. People magazine doesn't cover the kind of followers that become servants. And that's what it means to follow in the way of Jesus. To be great is to become a servant. Followers of the way are more likely to be the ones who come in before worship to make coffee, to grind those beans so that when you arrive, there's hot coffee in the back of the sanctuary. Followers of the way, those first followers, they're more likely to clean up and to blow out the candles after worship has ended. Followers of the way are more likely to leave in the middle of our service to go teach and to be with our children in godly play. Followers of the way are more likely to come in at 6 a.m. on February 14th to clean up after 120 unhoused folks have stayed here for a night of respite from the cold. They're more likely to stay that same night and to cook another meal. Followers of the way are most likely to show up at those tables and to sit down and to see in the face of the person across the table from them at Winter Sanctuary, a person who may have been on the streets for longer than they've been alive, to see the face of Jesus. They're more apt to do all those things than to stand in front of the spotlight or to hold on to a microphone. See, we know how the story goes. Jesus is heading toward the cross, and to follow him is to head that way too. He stops to pray with a few of his disciples at the Garden of Gethsemane. His betrayer is with him. The one who longed to be closest to him, that one denies him over and over and over. And Mark's gospel, unlike all the others, ends just like it begins, abruptly. No mysterious experience with the risen Christ, just an empty tomb and a young man who sends the only faithful followers who are keeping on, the women, out to tell the others that Jesus has gone on. Go search for him. He's gone ahead of you to Galilee. My sense is that when they find him, when they go searching for him, it'll be a lot like when they found him after the healing of Simon's mother-in-law. He'll just have this to say, "Let's go on to the next place." Frederick Buechner writes that to follow means to follow, not to lead, to point not to our own superior moral character, but to the dimly seen figure out there that we are stumbling after. Let's go on. Follow me. They stumbled after him, leaving behind boats and nets and a life they knew. Maybe you know something of leaving things behind to follow. Maybe some of you are leaving things behind in terms of the notion that you have of what church is supposed to be. Just to walk into this sanctuary. Maybe some of you are leaving behind past experiences of hurt in the name of Jesus to try to say that I can follow this one too. Maybe some of us are leaving behind grief that we just can hardly bear. Maybe some of us are leaving behind feeling like we just don't matter. Or maybe some of us are leaving behind feeling like we matter a little too much. Jesus calls folks to leave behind the life that has got us all tied up, to let that crash down, and then in that, to walk in the ways of new life. The way of new life for those first followers long ago was really familiar to them, and it was upside down. See, remember their life, it was going out, casting nets, going home, sharing a meal. It's so similar, this new life that they have, and yet so profoundly different. Jesus has called them to follow, to journey into a new life, and so there they go, going out, casting nets, going home, sharing a meal. Those first followers change everything. They could have heeded calls to other ways of life. They could have decided to lead themselves. We don't need this Jesus guy. I can figure this out. They could have decided to hang on to their nets and just stay where they were. They could have waited for someone else to step up and just held back. They could have waited on the grass while that lone nut danced by himself. Two more and two more and two more. But those long ago first followers were a turning point. We have no idea how many people turned Jesus down when he invited them to follow. We just don't know. That lone nut dancer in this video, he danced for several minutes before those first followers joined him. A few paused, a few tried a few moves, and then carried on without dancing anymore. The first followers of Jesus, much like the followers of this dancer, took a risk. They stand out and they brave ridicule. Their way isn't easy. It's challenging and it's simple. Go out, cast nets, come home, share a meal. That's what following Jesus looks like. And so we pause here in this home to share a meal that will sustain us for going out and casting nets. Amen.